Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Matt Migaki, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing killer craft beers. If you've ever wanted to sneak backstage and share a beer with one of your favorite musicians, well, Vox and Hops is the podcast for you. This week on the podcast, I dropped an amazing episode with Dom Grimal of The Last Felony, Ion Dissonance, and Cryptopsy. There is this episode and over 450 other ones to help you enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. So what are you waiting for? It's time to become a Vox and Hops head. Cheers!
Welcome to the Punk Rock and Beer Podcast.
Really quickly, before we get into this episode, I wanted to mention my Patreon. Patrons get all of the podcasts a week early. I do giveaways, I do some other stuff, but most importantly, if you want me to review your music or artwork or anything else, Patreon is the way to do that. Every month, I do a call for submissions. All you need to do, if you want me to review something, is just post it in the comments of that post. Then I will review it live on Twitch for the hundreds of people that tune into every stream and post it on Patreon for everyone to check out. All you need to do is just join at the $10 and up level. Stay tuned for that post and you are good to go. So if that sounds cool to you and you want me to review your music, artwork, or anything else, hit the link in the show notes for this episode. And thank you very much to everyone who supports over on Patreon. Johnny Frank, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for making time for this. I saw on your Zoom, it says John Frank. Is this like, if you've been childhood friends with somebody, you're like, hey, Bobby. And he's like, actually, it's Robert now.
No, the second people start calling me John is when I know I've lost my soul. But yeah, it's my name on my birth certificate, so I guess I gotta go with it sometimes.
Got it. Well, you know, I like to start with something a little bit spicy so that people will keep watching.
Oh,
I've told this story before, and I'm pretty sure I told you, but I'm gonna say it again because it's a good one. The people need to hear it. I met your dad in 2010 or something like that when you were on tour with Attack Attack. I didn't know it was your dad, but somehow or another it came up, and he said, well, what is this? And he showed me your Twitter, and you tweeted StarCraft 2, bitches. And he's like, what's going on here? I'm a little concerned. And I was like, no, it's a game. It's like StarCraft 2, comma, bitches, not StarCraft, comma, 2 bitches. He's playing a video game. He's like, oh, okay, good.
It's like, Mr. Frank, I hate to say it, but your son is a fucking nerd.
Yes. Don't worry. He's maidenless.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't worry. It's an RTS game.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's good. But in all seriousness, really just congratulations on everything you've done over the past couple of years. I mean, like, Bill Murray is one of these bands where people just really, really, really love it. Like, they love what you do. It makes them very happy. And I really like seeing that.
Thanks, man. Yeah, that's the goal. I'm very, very happy with how things have been growing. And we're just going to keep doing what we're doing. But yeah, it's been really enjoyable. And to see, like, how hardcore the fan base is pretty crazy. Because, you know, we really grew quite a bit during the pandemic, and then we start playing shows and everyone's wearing like potato sacks and goblin masks to the shows and, like, you know, getting like absolutely wild with it, which I love. I had no idea my stupid jokes would have such an impact on things, but it's been really great to see and witness in person.
It feels like you kind of leaned into like the silly like meme stuff, maybe starting around like absolutely cranking my effing hog, maybe around that era. Am I correct about that? Was that like a conscious thing?
I think that's when it reached its like absolute peak performance.
Yeah.
I feel like the album called Banana is really when I started to just say, you know what? I'm just going to do whatever the fuck I want and just see what happens. I felt like the titles had a lot more punch and were like much more memorable than just naming it like You or something like that.
Right.
So, but Absolutely Crankin' was probably the first song title where I was like, I want to push this as far as I possibly can and just see, is there a limit? Where is the limit? So yeah, you're right in that absolutely the peak of those ridiculous song titles. I realized the potential of it, how far I could push it.
Well, what I really like about that is that obviously you're having fun and being silly with some parts of it. You know, the it's not like it's a joke band. You know, your lyrics to me like feel like really heavy. For example, my favorite newer song is The Void Approacheth. You know, it's not like it's a joke band. I think there's this idea that like if you do with a lot of people in kind of the rock and metal world, that if you do anything fun, that means, you know, people won't take your music seriously. You know what I mean? And you've sort of proven that that's not true.
Yeah. I was thinking about that and I realized that Bill Murray is very much so in line with my personality where it's like, yeah, I'm kind of bubbly and funny on the outside, but I got the darkness inside my soul too. So I think that on the outside, you know, the song titles are very funny and whatever. The art's really bright, but you know, once you can dive into it and there's a lot of depth there. And I think that is something that was an unintended pouring out of just who I am, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's definitely a tightrope walk. You don't want to do too much funny stuff, especially in the music. When, you know, when I do a joke in the music, I'm very much thinking, is this too much? You don't want to fall into like the Marvel thing where they, you know, have this really somber moment and then just make like a dick joke afterwards. You're kind of, you're like, man, you should have just let that moment sit a little longer so that people could soak that in and then kind of ease back into the humor. So music wise, for sure, there's a lot of deliberation. Like, do I want to put a joke here or do I just want to let it be somber or be real for a little bit?
Well, I mean, that's how most people are, right? Like, people are not like serious all the time or goofy all the time. I mean, people are complex and multifaceted. And like, why shouldn't your music be that way too?
Yeah. And, you know, I do think that there's a lot more of a staying power to music that is serious than, you know, just joking around. So I try to keep it as serious as I possibly can.
What it feels like to me is like laughing through the pain.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people who are funny have probably gone through some shit in their life. And that's why they're funny, because it's the only way that you really know how to deal with what you're going through. So I'm sure that's in the concoction there too.
The Wojak meme of like the smiling mask with tears behind it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Bill Murray to me.
Yeah. I love that. Yes, I completely agree.
Along that same line, you know, you're not like a rock and roll guy in terms of like, seems like you don't party a lot. You know, you don't have like a big ego or anything like that. And usually I feel like that is what makes people successful. But you're one of these people where I think the fact that you are kind of low key is what people really respond to.
Yeah. Well, I always say like, I'm not hot enough to have an ego. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I was way hotter, I'd be a fucking asshole. No, I'm just kidding.
Right. If I looked like Andy Biersack, I would just treat everyone like absolute shit.
Well, because you're clearly better than them, you know?
Exactly. God blessed me with this face, which means I am better than you.
Exactly. No, I'm not hot enough to do that. So I have to have, no, I think ego to me is something that ruins creativity, at least for myself. So, you know, when I sense ego, when I sense that, because obviously I have ego.
Everybody does.
Everyone does. When I sense that, I usually find that it's in opposition to what I'm trying to do and what I'm trying to create. Specifically, what I've realized is like, even in this past year, as the band has gotten a lot bigger, what's been cool is the people that I'm working with are so specialized and so talented at what they do that for me, it a lot of the times, the lesson I learned this year was, or at least in 22, was you need to step out of the way here. You need to, you have a thing that you're really good at doing, this very specific thing, but this person next to you is really good at doing this very specific thing that helps you out. So you need to understand that you got to take a step back and let them do their thing and don't like hover over them. And ego just can't be a part of that. So yeah, I do try to actively work on that. And, you know, sometimes you notice the ego flares up and you're like, eh, shut up. That's not right. And I think for me, as long as I'm in pursuit of making the absolute best stuff and best music that I can, then ego just has no place there. Also, it's just not very fun to be egotistical. I have a lot more fun hanging around and fucking around with my friends than trying to act like I'm someone that I'm not or whatever.
Well, you've been really kind of a one-man operation for a long time. What are some of the things that you've been delegating and getting help with?
A lot. So, like I said, the big lesson I learned last year was, you know, I can keep my arms around the band and every aspect of the band at a certain point, at a certain size. It's gotten to a size where I can't keep my arms around everything. And last year I really tried to do that and it drove me nuts because I was trying to do way too much. I was working like 12 hours a day, just trying to keep a hold of everything. And your brain can only hold so much information. Right. So like, but I was like, oh, I got this, you know, maybe a little bit of ego, who knows. But I just couldn't let it go. And then I realized, like, in order to do this, in order to keep the band healthy, I have to let some things go and let these people who are unbelievably talented.
Is this like merch and that kind of thing, or?
It's about every facet of the band. So I got a manager, a booking agent, business manager, lawyer. I have a live band now, merch.
And so you were doing all that stuff yourself before?
Essentially, yes. You know, and even on the live aspect, I was teching the band. You know, I was...
No, I'll tune your toms.
Yeah, I was essentially like tuning everything, setting up guitar strings, all that stuff. And
when you have Josh Manuel in your band, just let him do his fucking thing.
Well, once he got in the band, I was like, I don't need to worry about this at all.
There's nothing you're going to do with drums that is going to be better than what he would do.
Fuck no. And so, you know, it was great because that helped me learn like, oh, Josh is in the band. He is the best drummer. Like in my mind, he's the best drummer. He's my number one pick. And then we get Reese in the band and he's in my mind, my number one pick for guitar. So I'm like, I no longer need to worry about that. Gabby and Kat, saxophone and then bass and keys. They're now so good and so specialized at what they do that I don't need to worry about those things anymore. And now I can just walk out on stage knowing that in my mind, I have the best live band that exists. And I can just have fun and do my thing, which is, you know, making poop jokes on stage, which is really my specialty and why God put me on this earth. So
we all have a gift. I was born to stereotype. That's my thing. I'm just really good at stereotyping people.
For me, it's like, you know, I don't feel like I'm fulfilling my purpose on this earth unless I'm making poop jokes in front of, you know, 300 to 500 people every night. So but like it does help me just enjoy being on stage because I don't have to worry about any of that. So that's on the live aspect. Then, you know, the business manager, I'm not a money guy. I learned how to manage.
Why would you want to be? That's like the least fucking fun thing in the world.
It's so important though.
Yeah, it's super important. But like if you can have somebody else do it.
Yes.
For a reason. And they'll pay for themselves.
Right.
Because, you know, all the savings and whatnot they find. So the ego thing is interesting to me because on the one hand, to be a good musician or creator or athlete or anything like that, you have to believe in yourself and you have to believe that like, I have a vision and I want to bring that vision to life. Like that's a necessary thing. On the other hand, you see so many fucking I think musicians have like the biggest egos of anybody that I have ever dealt with.
It's up there, dude. It's up there.
It's insane. And there's so many times where you see musicians just shoot themselves in the foot, like paying a bunch of money to go in the studio with some producer and then not listening to what they say. Why the fuck are you paying this person if you're not going to do what they say?
It's so funny, though. It's like ego mixed with the most insecure person that you've ever met. Like that is.
Yeah. I hate myself, like but I'm also right about everything.
Yeah. But don't ever fucking mention or question what I'm saying. Yeah, no. I actually do think at the higher levels, You do get a lot of people who are not like that, though.
Yeah, the successful people tend to be pretty cool.
You really can't.
Yeah.
Unless you're a literal god.
Right.
You know, like, you really can't do it without other people. And even if you are, you can't do it without other people. You need to work with other people.
I mean, if you look at a band like Ice Nine Kills, you know, they have a group of people that they work with and trust and, like, really treat as partners. And I think that's a big part of why they've gotten as big as they have, you know, like,
totally,
you know, my friend Mike Cortada does all their merch. They rely on him. They let him do his thing. They treat him like an actual valuable member of the team. And they make a lot of fucking money off merch because of that.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. I have Frankie Mish, who does all my design work. And when we first started working together, I was a much more hovery, but, you know, he's working on the next album artwork. And I'm like, dude, here's what I want, and I'm just going to trust that you're going to do a great job, and I'm not going to hover over you, and I know you're going to crush it. And then, yeah, legitimately, if I didn't have Will Carlson working with me, this band would be nowhere near as good as it is. He's one of those guys that's just so good at his job. I'll be sending mix notes to him, and it'll just be, make something cool here. And I like to call those, like, sprinkles.
Right.
I'm like, Will, or we call it sauce. We're like, this place, this verse one needs a little more sauce. So, yeah, I mean, it's important to remove ego out of the picture, especially because I used to mix Bill Murray and master it and produce it, do everything. And I was like, hey, Will, you should test mix this song, because I've been trying to mix it for a month and I'm about to fucking run my head through the wall.
And you usually work really fast, so if you're struggling with something for a month, like, there's something wrong.
Exactly. I just knew it could be better, and then he sends me back something like that day that's a billion times better than what I could do mix level, and I was like, all right, you're mixing this from now on. Like, there's just no way I'm ever gonna go back to mixing it unless I had to. But yeah, the partnership is so important to making it what it is. And I, yeah, everyone listening, it is definitely not a one-man operation anymore, and it hasn't been for a very long time. In fact, the reason that things are so good now is because it's not a one-man operation.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I kind of had a similar thing of, I used to edit all my videos myself, and I was so convinced, not even that I don't even think I'm that great of an editor, but I was so convinced that nobody could possibly do as good of a job as I do, because, like, nobody else could pick the right clips and blah, blah, blah. Like, well, shout out to my editor, Tim. He just emailed me out of the blue and asked if I was looking for an editor. And there's just something about the way that he approached me that I was like, let's try it. And lo and behold, he does a way better job than I did.
Yes, that's awesome. It's so important. And he can spend all of his time focusing on editing, and you can't do that.
Right.
And that's, even if you were a better editor, I learned that from Mr. Beast, but even if you were a better editor, you don't have the same amount of time to spend doing that and focusing on that as he does, as I'm sure you've gotten a lot more busy too, because you've grown a ton.
Yeah.
You have, like, a couple channels, and you stream and do all that. Right.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's,
and again, I had somebody shout out to my friend Jarrett, who helped me set up Twitch and edits all my second channel videos. Again, like, I wouldn't have done all that stuff if I didn't have help. So the lesson to me, for anybody listening, is, like, if there's people in your life who are asking you to help, who are good at what they do, say yes and trust them. And if it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out.
You'll be back where you started.
Yeah. But, like, just let go and fucking trust people. And, like, if somebody wants to help you, let them help you.
Yeah.
People just won't get out of their own way.
Yes, I agree. And even on that topic, like, I wanted to ask you, I feel like when we did the last podcast was before, I mean, social media has completely changed.
Yeah. It was December of 2019 was when we did our first podcast.
Yep.
Almost 3 years ago.
Your kind of format was, you know, 10 to 12 minute videos on YouTube. And things have changed so much where it's, you know, real shorts and TikTok. But I wanted to know, like, how you've kind of shifted your focus, or have you changed really your kind of strategy on what you're doing? Or
I don't think that I am good at I could be good at those, like, short form kind of things if I wanted to, but I don't like it. And so, I mean, I do some of the reels and TikTok stuff, but it's just not my emphasis. What I've decided to do is really, like, double down actually on long form stuff.
Cool.
Because I think that's what I'm better at. And that stuff's not going anywhere. So, for example, like, Twitch, you know, I started doing that about a year and a half ago. I only do it twice a week, but still, that's 6 hours a week. And then I chop up all the highlights of that and put that on my second channel. And so now I'm publishing, and the second channel videos tend to be you know, 15 to 25 minutes long, three or four times a week, plus a podcast. So I think the lesson to me is like, you should really focus on what you're good at.
You're telling me not to chase trends, dude?
Well, I mean, you have to take them seriously, right? You know, because they do matter. But you also can't, yeah, you can't just chase that trend. I mean, we've all seen this. If you've been around for a long time, you've seen trends in music come and go. And you see when someone is late to a trend and just trying to jump on that. And it's just obvious. It's so bad.
Yes.
You know, it's so bad. And there's going to be times where no matter what you do, the trends are going to be against you. The answer to that is not to jump on that trend. It's to weather the storm. And if you're actually good at what you do and you're actually doing something that connects with people, just weather the storm and things will come back. Like Newfound Glory is a good example of that. They were huge in, you know, the late 90s and early 2000s. And then they had kind of a low point in the mid 2000s when they were sort of, you know, I don't want to say washed up, but like they weren't cool anymore and nobody cared about them. And they weathered the storm and they came back in 2009. And now everyone loves Newfound Glory, you know? So I think whatever it is that you do, I think the answer is to like double down on what you're good at. And if there is a trend that you're genuinely excited about, jump on it.
Yeah.
But if you're not excited about it, don't.
That makes sense.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freites from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.
Hey there, I'm Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
Now that we're on that topic, I would love to hear some of your musical trends that have come and gone, that at least in the past decade, where you're like, I don't know, maybe ones that aren't as obvious because you are very good at like analyzing things and seeing trends that other people don't. So I'm curious to hear maybe a couple trends from, not even, we can keep it in the scene world if you want, but maybe overall.
Sure. One thing I find interesting is that now it's like there's a new wave of like shoegaze hype, right? You know, people are all into that stuff. And I remember the first wave of shoegaze revival hype in like
2015.
Maybe even a little bit before that, when like Tidal Fight. Yeah. When they started getting big and stuff.
That fucking album is so dope. What's it called? Hyper Night?
It's great, but it really, that trend fizzled pretty quickly.
I feel like by 2017, it was gone.
Totally gone. You know, Turnover was another really good one.
That's so true. There was like the shoegaze, but also like that kind of grunge revival too.
Yep.
Damn. Yeah. I haven't even thought about that for, I was actually going through my old Spotify Wrapped playlists and like 2016, 2017, it was all that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn, I don't even listen to that at all anymore.
Yeah. And not that that stuff was bad or anything.
It's no, just, it's great.
A thing that came and went, and it seems like it's coming again, and it'll probably go again. Another one would be the 2013, 2014, like Tumblr pizza pop punk, you know, like Real Friends and the Wonder Years and all that kind of stuff, which the story so far, you know, would fit into that. And I love that stuff. That was like, I mean, I was obviously a lot older than those people, but like, I just thought it was a really cool scene. It was like, it's very wholesome. It wasn't too edgy.
It definitely captured my attention. Like, I think I only listened to the story so far for like a year.
So you're the ultimate trend hopper.
I approach trends for sure. Lo-fi was a big one.
You were on the dubstep program.
Oh, of course, dude.
You were the leader of the dubstep program.
The dubstep gold rush?
Yes.
I definitely heard dubstep and I was like, this has to be, you know, a part of what we're doing. But I try now when I see trends.
But it sounded great. I mean, like, I think you do a really good job of incorporating stuff like that in a way that feels like, it doesn't feel like it's hopping on a bandwagon. It's like, oh, right. This is a new thing to play with.
I view trends as seasonings.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, with Bill Murray specifically, it's always going to be drum, bass, guitar, vocal. Always. But the different synth sounds I use and song structures and stuff like that are always going to be kind of changing depending on what I'm interested in the moment. And you know, if it's a trend that I enjoy, I will definitely use that as like a flavoring. But I never want to like jump, you know, fully invest into that stock, right, so to speak.
But like, I could see you doing a reggaeton song and it wouldn't be weird.
Who knows?
Maybe not like straight up reggaeton, but like you could have like some reggaeton elements in a song. And I think that would totally like that would make sense.
Yeah, I definitely use that beat a ton because it's amazing. But yeah, I mean, it really is like whatever I'm interested in. That's where I'm using it as a seasoning, essentially.
Well, one thing that I really like about Bill Murray that separates it from a lot of other kind of current rock and metal to me is that you have at the core what feels to me like a strong pop sensibility, meaning like it's really strong vocal melodies, vocal forward mixes, and song structures that, you know, they're not maybe super standard, but it's not like riff salad. At the end of the day, to me, it is like twisted pop.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
We call it heavy pop.
Okay, there we go.
It's like pop with like a it's pop for someone who has ADHD.
Yes.
Because I think that heavy music is the most exciting music to me. It is just, you know, someone's yelling on a microphone. Everything's loud as shit. And I use that a lot to interject an energy that really doesn't exist in pop music.
Right.
Well, and I love it. And live, it's like, it is, you know, if it was just the pop part of it, it would not be nearly as enjoyable as if, you know, it's like, this is a pop song with a riff, you know, at the end that has like China.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that was the scene I grew up in, and I will forever be using elements of that, you know, that type of music, because those shows pop off harder than any other show. I call it heavy pop, essentially.
But the specific thing to me, I guess, that I've really become aware of in the past several years is how much, I'll say metal, but it's like rock in general, but especially like the heavier side of things, metal musicians really don't care about vocals. And it's very strange to me that they just care about riffs and nobody talks about vocals and vocal melodies. all the mixes, because everyone, all the mixers are guitarists. The fucking vocals are buried. And it's strange to me, because the biggest bands that everybody, you know, cites as an influence, like say Slipknot, or Linkin Park or Lamb of God, like all have really strong vocals, and the mixes, the vocals are loud as shit in the mixes. And it feels like metal just doesn't care about vocals anymore. And I think that's a big part of why it's not as popular.
This is something I've also been learning. It is very apparent when a guitarist is writing everything.
Yes, exactly.
And I never really noticed that until, because I don't really listen to metal a ton.
Yeah.
But when I go back and listen to metal, I'm like, oh my God, this is a minute of just guitar riffs.
Yeah. Which is great if you're another guitarist.
But essentially, it's like a guitarist being like, dude, look at how sick I am. Yeah. I'm like, this isn't even like serving the song. This is right. Just you kind of flexing to flex. And there's no melodic part to it.
Like, their idea of a songwriting is to put a bunch of riffs together and then give it to the vocalist and be like, you know, do something, whatever, over this. I don't care.
To be fair, if that's what they want to do, then so be it.
Totally.
You know, if they want it to be like guitar centric, fair enough. But like, yeah. I get pretty bored, you know, when I hear stuff like that. I hear a good riff on guitar. I mean, I'm a guitarist first.
Sure.
And if I hear a good riff, I'm like, oh, that's cool. Like, I really enjoy that. But it can't sit around for too long, or else I'm very much so get to the meat of the song. Like, when is someone going to start singing?
And I think for anybody who's frustrated with, the reason I mention this is because a lot of people are also frustrated that their music isn't getting the reaction that they want. And I think that a lot of that is because it's guitarists writing for other guitarists, and not everybody is a guitarist. The reality is that human beings, our brains are programmed to like connect with human voices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my suggestion, as someone who's not a great musician, but I've worked with a lot of great musicians, is like try thinking about vocals more. Try writing like a vocal melody first, and like just maybe don't revolve everything around guitars for once.
I'm about 16 years into my career, and I'm just learning that lesson. I approached a lot of stuff from a guitarist first standpoint, but also, you know, I'm like, I sing too a little bit.
Yeah.
And
no, I think you're a great singer.
Thanks, man. I'm trying.
You have a lot of emotion in your voice, which is ultimately that's what matters.
Yeah. And what I've learned is, and what I'm doing now is I'm writing, if you can get a banging vocal and a banging chord progression, you can kind of wrap that in a cool guitar riff.
Right.
It doesn't need to be, oh, I need to write a sick guitar riff first and then slap a vocal on there. I can write a sick melody, a sick chord progression, and then add a guitar riff after that, you know, depending if you've really got a solid melody that can carry a song, then it'll be super easy to write a guitar riff around that.
Like, your songs could be arranged as just straight up pop songs or electronic songs or whatever. You could take out the guitars and like it would still work just fine arranged in another genre. That's not true of a lot of metal.
Well, you know what's really interesting is songwriting is always just going to be songwriting.
Yeah.
Which sounds stupid as fuck, but as I explain it,
no, you know, it's totally true.
Songwriting, you listen to any genre, they're all the same types of songwriting. They're just choosing to wrap it in a specific genre.
Exactly.
So, you know, maybe there's a slight difference, but you could take any song and name a song like what's the Motionless in White song that sounds like Michael Jackson? It's like,
oh, the Halloween one. I forget.
Werewolf. That's a pop song. That's a pop song.
Yes.
100% a pop song. All you have to do is take the guitars out, put in like electronic drums and like stabby synths, and it's that.
This is why all those punk goes pop comps got so big, is because those are incredible fucking songs.
Exactly.
That you just put some breakdowns in it. And it's like, oh, it's still an incredible song, but now it's wrapped in the genre that I like.
And to me, a really good song, you can put on any genre. This could be a country song, or a pop song, a rock song. You can do whatever you want with it, or whatever song, a folk song. You can do whatever you want with it, and the song will still stand, you know, its ground. And to me, genre is just the wrapping that you wrap the gold in.
It's just like choosing an option, like in an RPG, like in a drop down, you know? That's how I think of it, you know?
Yes. What class
do you want?
The song
is the song. It's just like, what genre do you want it to be expressed in? But it's still the same song.
Yep. It's exactly right. So yeah, I think that for me, I have a lot of fun trying to blend in every genre I'm interested in at the moment, which is like where a lot of the problem solving happens within the song, is like, how do I incorporate metal and country into this one part? Not like have a metal part and
without it sounding like Weird Al, some fucking jokey mishmash of shit.
Exactly. And it can't sound like parody. It's got to sound organic. You know, how does this heavy guitar, could I add a pedal steel to this heavy guitar? And, you know, if it works, it works.
Right.
But yeah, that's what I enjoy doing.
That's really what I love about Bill Murray, is that it's, you know, there's always something different, always something unexpected. There's always a surprise, but it never feels forced.
Yeah, it's got to feel, it's just got to be enjoyable. I like to have things absolutely surprise people, you know, but it can't be everything slammed in and just obvious that, oh, he's just trying to mash genres together that don't work.
Right.
It's got to flow.
One thing I've noticed is that you slowed down a little bit. You used to do like 3 or 4 albums a year, which is insane and amazing. But you've slowed down and only put out 3 albums in 2 years, which is still way more than most people do. What's behind that?
I was kind of testing it out to see if I liked that format. And the conclusion is, fuck no, I hated it. I only released 1 album last year and I disliked doing that because there's so much waiting to put stuff out and so much like ramping up to this. And we've got to get, you know, this thing here. And it really made me kind of miss the days when I literally would finish the album and then upload it that day. Be like, all right. Or I'd finish the album, get the artwork the next day, and then click upload for a week later.
I mean, that's what everybody does in other genres, you know?
Yeah, there's a freedom to that. And
yeah,
you let people decide which songs they like the most instead of telling them these are the 8 to 10 songs you're going to like.
Right.
So this next year is really going to be kind of more a return to form of just freely releasing things as I please and as it makes sense. But I don't think I'll ever release just 1 album a year. Who knows? I mean, maybe things will change.
Which is still, again, even 1 album a year is more than the vast majority of bands do. So even you at your slowest is still pretty fast.
Yeah, I would lose my mind if I didn't release an album every year. But this next year will probably be 2. That's kind of the goal.
I don't understand how people, just because, again, I'm...
What do you do all day?
Yeah, exactly.
If you're a musician.
Exactly.
You're a professional musician.
Exactly. Well, I think what it is a lot of people like being in a band more than they like making music, if that makes sense.
Yes. Well, it doesn't make sense to me because I'm like, what are you doing all day?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people like all the other stuff, but like, again, I'm a shitty musician, but like, I really enjoy writing and recording music. That's fun to me.
That's it to me.
But I think a lot of people in bands don't necessarily love that part of it.
That's crazy. I mean, put me in the studio every day, which is what I do.
Right. That's fun.
If I have hours of free time, I'm like, oh, it's my off day. I'm going to go write a song, see if there's anything there. And yeah, and I mean, you know, fair enough to them if that's what they want to do, is just hop on stage and play guitar, and that's, you know. But for me, I literally will go insane if I don't write a song, at least a couple songs a week. Slowing down was a test to see if I liked that, and I hated it. So we're back. I at least want to do 2 releases this year, and then, you know, who knows, maybe next year we do 3. Whatever,
see what happens.
Whatever I'm feeling, but I'm returning to the freedom of just releasing songs as they need to be released and not putting it in a box and being like, I have to do an album at the end of the year and that's it.
And have a rollout and this and that.
Fuck rollouts, dude.
I just don't think that's the world we live in anymore.
Agreed.
I mean, maybe if you're Avenged Sevenfold or something like that, you know, maybe it's different at that level. I don't know.
Yep.
But like but I don't know if it is. I mean, shit, like Drake and 21 Savage just dropped a fucking album with like 3 days notice.
It was awesome.
Yeah. And it was great. And it's a hit. I just don't think that's the world we live in anymore. Like, I don't think people don't care about big things coming soon. And like,
dude,
do you know what I mean? It's like, just give me the fucking song.
Oh, yes, I do. The last album I did, Goblin Hours, took quite a bit of time to do because I was, again, trying to do everything and not letting people just do their job. And I was the bottleneck a lot of last year. Stepping out of the way of those things really frees me up to do a lot more and release a lot more music for the upcoming year. But yeah, I don't know. I also was thinking about that a couple days ago. I was looking through my Spotify because, you know, I was like maybe a little old school, like I love releasing album and I like listening through an album. But then
I say fuck albums, dude. Just give me the singles, give me the good stuff.
Here's what I realized. I was like, well, yeah, I like albums. And then I was like, dude, you don't even fucking listen to albums. Right. You don't. I was like, look at your Spotify. When's the last time you went straight through an album? It's been a long time.
Nobody does
and
that.
So, right. And it's like, if I'm having this, I'm a music guy. If I'm having this expectation on anyone else to listen all the way through an album, and I don't even do that, I'm just like, oh, I like this song. I like this right. song. I like this song. So that's kind of the approach we're taking a lot more next year, is just like, let's just release some singles, release some, you know, an album, but like, it doesn't need to be this humongo thing where I'm like 3 days from a month from yeah. now, you know.
You have to post your trailer with some staticky cryptic thing that's like Wednesday.
God.
You know,
if I can never do that again in my life, I mean, I'll do it if I have to, but if I could never do that again, I would be very happy.
It's so corny and played out. Who wants that? You know,
the countdown has begun.
Right. The people will decide if it's good or not.
Exactly.
They will, you know, and I don't think there's any correlation between like how much time and energy you put into your rollout and how successful something is, because we can all think of plenty of bands that just busted their ass trying to do this elaborate rollout and nobody gave a shit. And then we can think about stuff that you just put it out on, you know, MySpace or YouTube or something, and then it blew up and you're like, oh, I wasn't expecting that.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. There's so much, such an inefficient use of time last year where I'm like, fuck, like can't believe I wasted so much time on that shit. Like I could have just done this and it would have been better.
Well, it's interesting to hear you say that, because I think of you as being really the template for like how to do things the right way, which is you just have like a constant stream of stuff coming out, whether it's music or just silly memes or videos, or like you're always putting out something creative. And I think of it as like, you know, to me, the model is not like, oh, let's wait for this album. It's just like, I want to follow creators and like, and I would call, you know, musicians or creators to me. I want to follow creators who make cool shit and just see what they're putting out on a constant basis. Does that make sense?
Yes. The thing that I've thought a lot of recently is I don't want music to become content, essentially, where it's like, but I think there's a balance there. Like, I don't want to just shit music out to shit it out.
Yeah.
I really want to like care about it and enjoy it. And I don't want it to be viewed as like an Instagram post almost,
right,
where it's like,
right,
oh yeah, like we got another song, I guess.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't want it to be so sacred that I'm, you know, I have this really boxed in view of it and it needs to be this way and there needs to be a rollout. I hate that shit too. But I worry about it being like, oh, you release a song and whatever. And there's another song, whatever. And it's like the balance that you kind of have to find. And
like, I forget if it was Lil B or Soulja Boy. One of them released like 35 mixtapes in a day.
Yeah, I think that's a little too far for me on one side of the spectrum. Whereas I don't want it to be viewed as just content. Like,
right.
And I don't want to view it that way. I want to view it as like, I'm doing my very best to make the best stuff that I can. And it's going to come out, you know, as soon as it makes sense. But I've gotten fast at doing that. And then I can definitely up the pace back up again, because it's just a lot more fun that way. And you let people decide what they like, because you have no idea. Like the song that I dislike the most on this, I mean, I didn't dislike any of the songs. I fucking love every song on my last album. But the song that I found myself listening to the least became very popular. And I was like, all right, fair enough. You know, I don't know what people are going to like. I have a general idea, but it's, you know, it's usually slightly off from what the fan base enjoys.
Yeah. I mean, a good example of that to me is, you know, Bad Omens.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they had a big moment on TikTok last year, and the song was not even a single. It's just a random album track that I don't think they necessarily intended to be like a big thing, but that's the one the audience decided was the most meaningful for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I would like to put that power in the audience's hands more. Be like, all right, here's a bunch of songs. You guys pick which ones you like. You know, whichever one people just naturally listen to the most is the ones that are the best, you know, for me, because I'm going to enjoy all of them. Right. So that's fine. It's going to pass through that filter. But once it passes through that filter, I just want to open it up for anyone to choose what they like and figure it out. And then the cream will rise to the top and then we'll play it live. So,
yep. And that's getting back to the ego thing of like, you know, I have the same thing with my videos. There are certain ones that I really want people to like care about. Well, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Yep.
And you know, the ego thing, you can't force anything on your audience. It just, it's going to be what it's going to be. And I just try to be grateful that anyone cares about anything.
Yes. Because you can get really bitter.
Yeah.
I've seen artists get really bitter where it's like, people don't give a fuck about my real shit, you know? And it's like, dude, the fact that human beings are paying your mortgage by listening to your music, you should be like weeping daily.
Exactly.
To sound egotistically humble, I like legitimately wake up most days and truly like thank the universe and thank God that people streaming my music pays for my bills. And the fact that, you know, like I just bought a puppy and I'm like, dude, people streaming my shit on Spotify bought this fucking puppy. That's insane to me. And I'm super grateful. So I'm going to choose not to be like, oh, I wish they listened to this song instead. It's like, who gives a shit, dude? The big thing is covered in the fact that you are able to live on this planet doing what you love. And so, yes, that is the perspective I very much have. But I can see how, and I do see a lot of artists get really bitter at that.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten that way sometimes. And I really try to check it whenever I see it coming up, because it's like, you can find fault in anything in this world if you want to. But
they can always be better or worse.
Right. But what's the point in that? Like, you're not going to make yourself happy by like, yeah, well, I know I'm blessed to make a living, you know, making music or videos or whatever. But like, okay, well, you just ruined something amazing for yourself. Congratulations.
Yeah. Human beings are so good at doing that. Like, you know, yeah, I definitely think it's like a very kind of garden thing where you got to weed the garden every once in a while of those kind of shitty attitudes. I noticed like at certain times on tour, I would notice things like that, you know, where maybe like we'll go to a venue and I'd be like, oh, dang, they forgot our carrots on our rider. I'm like, shut the fuck up, dude. Like to myself, you know, like,
do you know who I am?
Oh, God. I luckily have not done that, but like, I'll just be like, oh,
I want to do that sometime. And they'll be like, no, should I? And like, no, I was just wondering.
Never mind. It's not like I care, but yeah, it's definitely like a thing. You got to kind of pull those weeds out where you remember how good of a spot you have. And yeah, there's little things you could find to bitch about in any situation, but yeah, I'm very grateful for sure. And pick whatever fucking song of mine you want to listen to. I'll be happy that you're listening.
Great. Well, I think that's a good note for us to end it on. Thank you very much for joining me as always, and congratulations on all your success. I think it's super inspiring and I'm really excited to see what's next for you.
Dude, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me back on again. This is awesome.
Anytime.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home, think about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
Hey, you. Do you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020'd? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020'd, where myself, Benny Goodman, And my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.